Welcome to Innovate's webinar, 2 minutes and take action, 5 tips to increase learning by satisfying sensory needs. This webinar has been created to meet a specific need. If part of your life is spent with a child with sensory issues, such as a child who cannot sit still or who screams whenever the lights are turned on in the morning or after a rest time, then you might be desperate for a quick and practical solution. Then I'm glad you're here. You are why we are here. Let me explain where here is. I'm Diane, owner of Innovate. Innovate offers products for people with special needs, but especially children with sensory issues like sensory processing disorder, autism, Asperger's, Down's, attention deficit disorder, and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. When placing orders, people have often asked me for information that I was unable to give because I either didn't know the answer or is uncomfortable sharing since I don't feel qualified. At first, I got around it by asking a few knowledgeable people to write short, practical action guides that I could share. By the way, for those of you who know us, action guides are what we used to call reports. People loved the action guides so much they wanted more of them on a wide variety of topics. I asked already busy occupational therapists and special needs teachers for help, and they were very supportive. Unfortunately, emotional support was all they could provide. They never had the extra time to write the action guides. However, people were waiting for more action guides. I put a call out for help, and the gods of good fortune granted my wish and introduced me to my special guest this evening. Dora Potts is the best of two worlds. She is a retired teacher and a published writer-researcher who has the gift of being able to gather information, know what would work in the real world, and share the best ideas in a page or two. Her background and writing ability means that if you invest a couple of minutes to read one of our action guides, you will have some practical ideas of what you can do to move toward a solution. Later in this webinar, I will talk more about our initial library of action guides and the special offer for joining us on this call. For now, I would like to introduce you to Dora. Dora, please take it away.
Hi, thank you, Diane. I think I have the best of two worlds. I had the great pleasure of working with children for 32 years in the regular classroom. Yes, we'll talk about what that is in a few minutes. I taught kindergarten for 20 years and first and second grades for the other 12. Most of these years were spent in a school that served two distinct populations. We had the poverty-stricken and we had the local rich and famous, with very little in between except the teachers. It was a unique school and it was a wonderful school. The teachers and principals who stayed there made it so, and I learned every bit as much as I taught while I was there. I tell you all this so you will know that I am not the typical educational consultant. I used to love going over the educational consultant credentials at teacher in-services. You know, how many years they'd studied, how many degrees they had, and how many books they'd written. What? No mention of real children in their experience? I did not spend my life in a plush, comfortable office directing educational policy while never having seen a live child, let alone a child with special needs. In fact, over the years, my classroom tended to be the one where some of the more serious special needs kids were placed. I think this happened because principals saw over the years that meeting the needs of every single child was like solving a puzzle to me. I was driven. I was also very stubborn. Just hearing from a former teacher that a child, quote unquote, could not do anything was like waving a red flag in front of a bull. Progress toward that very thing suddenly became my goal. And during most of the time I was teaching full-time, I was also raising 3 children of my own and trying to give them the best of myself during non-teaching time. Yes, I was in the real world of teaching. For 2 years after I retired, I operated a private tutoring business serving up to 16 kids a week for one-hour sessions. Many of my clients were children who struggled at school because of sensory-related issues. During these same 2 years, I taught GED prep courses to adult learners, anywhere from the age of 16 through 65 and above. These people had previously given up on graduating from high school. The failure of some of them to graduate was due to sensory-related and other needs that were not met in school. As a side note, for the last 4 years, I have had a close-up personal experience with a child on the autism spectrum. It has been like a crash course in sensory needs and how to meet them while helping the child toward his true potential. I've learned what works and what doesn't as part of daily life. We've hit a few bumps along the way, but it has been an overwhelmingly successful experience. Part of what I feel competent to share with you comes from this experience. After all those years in education, I just assumed that whatever I did to pay the bills for the rest of my life would involve kids in classrooms. Well, then I moved quite a few states away from home, where it's not easy or inexpensive to become certified to teach. I found myself taking a part-time job as a newspaper writer, which turned into editor, and eventually morphed into what I do today. This sequence of events has enabled me to put together two things I love, teaching and writing. I write instructional materials and consult on educational matters from home, and it's turned into a 40-hour week, which I love. A big part of my joy in this type of work has been meeting Diane. She has given me the opportunity to help provide classroom teachers and others with information that I wish I had had when I was in the classroom. What I do for her is combine strategies from experts she knows through her business, like occupational therapists and other special needs consultants, with the best of the best from online sources and experts I know. Then I add a dash of things that have worked for me, mostly things I learned from some of the very talented special needs educators with whom I worked. I take all of these resources and extract only what classroom teachers need to know to do their jobs, based on information that I wanted and needed as a classroom teacher. Research study results and long explanations of the biology and chemistry of student needs have their places, but they are not what a teacher needs when a student is having a crisis. I know that teachers need basic information and practical strategies to deal with the crisis and to help prevent future ones. And they need this information in a language that is clear and free of the technical jargon that the classroom teacher was not trained to understand. So, whether you are a regular classroom teacher, a special needs teacher, in elementary or at the preschool level, or if you are a supervisor of these teachers in some capacity, you know the need for a flow of information between those who know about special needs kids and those who actually teach these kids in a classroom. I know these things because my years in education were spent in the trenches, trying to keep my head above water while meeting a wide spectrum of needs within a regular classroom. Let's talk about that word regular for a minute. You may refer to it as Gen Ed for general education. Seriously, regular? I love that term. Whose regular classroom is indeed regular? There is nothing regular about a classroom, especially in today's schools. There is not a regular lesson or a regular child. No 2 days or children are alike. There are always surprises, and one thing you can never say about teaching is that it's boring. But regular? Not a chance. But the powers that be use the term regular to refer to classrooms that contain your quote-unquote average child. Some people even use the term normal, and we all know there's no such thing as a normal child. They simply mean that, as a rule, children in a regular classroom will generally not need anything but regular instruction. Again, what is that? And the term general ed classroom is no more descriptive. So for our purposes, we're going to refer to the regular or general ed classroom as classroom. If we are talking about a classroom taught by a teacher trained in special needs, we will call it a special needs classroom, even though we know that all children have special needs. During this presentation, we'll be speaking directly to classroom teachers, but I know that you may be with us in another capacity. Whatever your role, please take the knowledge and ideas we present and use them in a way that helps you meet the needs of the special needs kids in your life. So, classroom teachers find themselves in charge of the instruction of many varieties of learners, and we handle most of that with ease, or at least with a lot of preparation and perspiration. Things go along pretty well until we find ourselves without the skills to handle one certain child, or three, or six certain children. Their skill level or behavior or whatever poses challenges that are just outside of our realm of expertise. The child or children in question indeed have special needs. So you say at this point, all of my children have special needs, and you're right. Special needs kids do not always come with an IEP or educational diagnosis and miles of paperwork. Sometimes they just come sit in your class, where it soon becomes apparent that all of your planning and teaching expertise cannot begin to meet their needs. And even if these children do arrive with a detailed diagnosis and educational plan, how many of them also come with specific operating instructions? Probably zero. I mean, when you get a new toaster, you get a booklet of operating instructions. Yet, with a new child in your class, one whose future is in your hands, you get nothing. We're back to Johnny. You are told that little Johnny occasionally has meltdowns. Well, what causes this and what can you do to lessen the chance of them happening so that little Johnny and all of your other students can learn? You are also told that little Susie learns best when she is sensorily satisfied. Okay, just what does that mean and how do you do it while keeping curriculum on track for her and the rest of the class? And how about that rest of the class? Who's to say they wouldn't do better if they were sensorily satisfied? This is what we want to do with this presentation and with the Library of Action Guides that Diane was talking about earlier. We want to bridge that gap between the information you are given and the success you have modifying instruction and classroom environment so that all of your children can learn. All right, let's consider the kids and adults that I was talking about before. The ones I worked with while teaching and tutoring, the ones whose sensory needs were not being met in the regular classroom, why and how did that happen? Well, it certainly was not because of a lack of teacher dedication. I know this because I know some of their teachers. My children had some of those teachers, and I knew they went above and beyond to reach all students. So, why are sensory needs not met in the classroom? Well, the first one is because of lack of training. If your degree is in general education, your university schedule was packed with gen ed courses with no room left for special needs classes. Maybe you had time for one or two of those classes, but they were general overviews. No specifics. No what to do if. The second problem is lack of time. Once you begin teaching, time is a major issue. As driven as you may be to meet the needs of all your students, there are only 24 hours in each day, and a teacher's time is in a perpetual crunch. The third is lack of energy. Face it, by the time you have nurtured students all day, attended a meeting or three after school, set up for the next day, you are done. Even if you have the time and there are no more vacant brain cells in your head to handle deep research into a particular child's needs. This is where we want to help. But one more thing before we get into specific needs and solutions, and this is very important, this information is not just for that one or three or six kids who are crying or chewing, or whatever. The information we give can support all of your students. There's a quotation that's commonly attributed to John F. Kennedy. Others say it was coined by economic theorists before Kennedy's time. Others link it to early religious writing. It's quite the combination. Well, whatever the source, it is highly applicable to education in general, and our discussion in particular. And it is, a rising tide lifts all boats. This is to say the strategies we present today are not isolated strategies for one child or several children, but they should become part of your classroom and the way you teach all the time. So in meeting the needs of your special needs kids, you will be increasing your chances of meeting the needs of all of your students. Why? Because our guides support increased teacher knowledge. We're not going to give you reams of statistics and psychological studies. We will give you a simple, basic explanation of puzzling behavior and special needs as they relate to our classroom solutions. As in most things, knowledge is power. Once you understand the reason for certain behavior, the suggested strategies will make more sense. Also, once you understand the need, that will enable you to discover additional strategies as you work with your children. This also gives you teaching time. The special needs kids will be more functional during your teaching and free up your attention for the entire class and instruction. All those masterfully prepared lessons will actually reach children's brains and not be lost to the kids while you deal with a child who is crying because the light is too bright. These action guides will help you create a sensory sensitive environment for all kids. Your classroom will be ready to meet the needs of all learners. You may discover that special needs solutions actually solve some learning issues for other children. Gasp. There are actually children with undiagnosed needs. You know there are. And we are all sensory beings, so you just never know who you will be helping besides the identified child. The fourth thing that this will bring is consistency for students. You can use what you learn about sensory and other needs to assist parents in their journey toward meeting the needs of their children at home. We know that consistency is always a friend of education and that it is crucial for special needs kids in particular. This bridge to parents will make your classroom a much more positive and effective place to teach and learn. What I'm going to do now is give you your first five, an immediately usable suggestion for dealing with each of five common sensory-related issues that you probably see in the regular classroom. If you haven't seen any of these issues, there are teachers all over the world who would love to meet you and find out where you get your students. I can safely say that in my quote-unquote regular classroom, these kinds of issues were prevalent. Some of these strategies come from academic resources, and you will find yourself thinking, ooh, great science activity, and that's wonderful. Or you may think, that's not in my grade level curriculum. Well, neither is little Johnny disrupting the lessons that are in your curriculum. And if a strategy helps learning happen for him and the other students, it's time well spent. Remember, we are not as much interested in the product of the activity as the process, and the fact that the activity does something to soothe the child's senses. This is all about the how. If you get academic achievement within just the strategy, that's a bonus. And you'll have to excuse me, I've been dealing with allergy issues and I seem to be getting hoarse, but we will move on. One more thing before we start on the strategies. Many teachers struggle with using strategies with only one or a few children in class, especially if the strategies look fun to other kids. You know, kids want to try anything new because it's a fun thing. There are two ways to deal with this. First of all, let them use the same strategy. If the strategy could also be appropriate for other students, and really you never know with most of them, let all of them try it with the stipulation that if it works the opposite way and it hurts their progress, it will be discontinued for them. You can say, my job is to see that all of you have all the things you need to help you learn in my class. Sometimes strange things can help us learn and get our work done. Today we're going to try one of those. Then you go on to explain the rules of use and what would end the strategy's use for any child so that they know ahead of time. If I see that you are playing with that fidget instead of listening, I will ask you to put it back in the basket. I will do this because I cannot let anything disrupt your learning. The other alternative is to not let them, but explain. If there is a particular piece of equipment involved that is not truly appropriate for general use, like a weighted vest that was specifically designed for a child, tell the children that and why only one or a few students will be using it. Kids are marvelous. They understand way more than we give them credit for. All you have to say is, Johnny is going to be wearing a special vest to help him concentrate in class. He needs this vest in order to do his best. If you needed one, I would see that you got one, but you don't, so we won't try this with everyone. And just leave it at that. Like I said, kids will understand. Okay, before we start on the slides, let me tell you what you're going to get. On each strategy, you're going to get the strategy name and the source. We will tell you which action guide it's contained in. You will also get the identified need. This is what would be in that paperwork that you'd receive, hopefully, with a child. It's just a clue about what type of child might benefit from that strategy. Not a guarantee. Then you'll also get observable behavior. This is what you see. This is not a diagnosis, but it's the type of behavior that you will be able to observe. Then you will get a procedure, which will be a brief description of the strategy with some suggestions about its implementation. Okay, first one. First strategy I want to share with you is a touch garden. This comes from our sensory solution set, action guide number 6, called Tactile Treasures. The child who might benefit from this might be diagnosed with autism, might be diagnosed as a sensory seeking child, or various other kinds of diagnoses. What you will see is a child who is soothed by textures. A child seems observed constantly rubbing things, touching things, seeking these textures. Procedure is to establish a little special little indoor garden filled with tactically attractive plants. This does not have to be elaborate. A simple pot or a small planter set up in the classroom can appeal to children who have this touchy need. There are several plants that are particularly tactile, and they also will withstand those little fingers messing with them. These include lamb's ear, hens and chicks, and straw flower. A few plant minutes before or between more intense study periods can provide calming necessary for focus on other things. And this could be something that the child takes over on his own as he learns that this makes a difference. All right, different type of child. This activity is called heavy lifting. It comes from motor motivation, which is in sensory solutions. It's number 8. And this child might have a diagnosis in all that paperwork of autism, ADHD, D, sensory seeking concerning large motor. This, what you will see in this child, is a child with the high activity level. This child seeks motion, and we're talking big motion. This is the child who lets loose whenever a physical activity is involved. This would be the child who goes all out the minute you open the classroom door to the playground. He's the one who flies off the top of the monkey bars or pushes the swing to its highest limits. This child craves motion. What you do is assign tasks that provide the use of large muscles. Doesn't have to be a special exercise program or anything. Just do this throughout the day. While it seems like this would only intensify the movement pattern, it can actually calm the child by providing the muscle use that he seeks. Let this child be in charge of opening heavy doors or dragging those heavy bags of playground balls. You need books moved from one area to another? Put this kid in charge. I have seen this in action. It will be done in no time, and the child will have received the stimulation his muscles need. Note that even though this activity has an overall calming effect, you'll want to allow a minute or two of quieting and breathing time before expecting the child to focus on more sedate activities. All right, this is one that a lot of you are probably going to go, oh no, never in my classroom. This is what I said actually about this activity until my last 2 years of teaching, and I really wish I had taken advantage of it before. This is called Water Source. It's from Sensory Solutions number 9, Oral Opportunities. The child may be diagnosed with autism and other things. Really, though, any child can benefit from this. What you might see in a child who really needs this activity is constant oral motion, chewing on inappropriate things like clothing or buttons, constantly putting everything in his or her mouth. What students do is keep a water bottle at their desk. I know. For some of you that believe that, you know, clear desk is good learning method, I tended to feel this way up until my last 2 years in the classroom. And I had heard at various workshops and reading materials in which this was suggested, so I finally decided to try it. I really wish I'd done it sooner. You can increase the effectiveness of this one by using a small circumference straw, which requires the kids to use more effort to suck. Meanwhile, you'll be teaching a good habit. Kids are often dehydrated, which doesn't help the brain at all. They're also learning to drink water instead of other drinks when they're thirsty. And if you're going to do this one for one child, it's appropriate to allow all to try it, with the provision that if the privilege is misused, like playing, sporting, things like that, it will be withdrawn, because obviously it's not helping the situation. Present it to the children that way. We're going to try a water bottle at our desk. This is why, if it doesn't work for you, you will not use it anymore, period. You can use this strategy, like I said, with any strategy you'd just like to try with more than one child. There's going to be a bonus report created soon about talking to kids about strategies and a little story that you can use to do this. And it talks to the idea that equal does not always mean the same as fair. Children need different things, and helping children to understand that will take you miles. My general rules with the water bottle, you can fill at the beginning of the day and midday. You have to keep your desktop dry with a paper towel under it to prevent sweating, and you take it home weekly to wash or replace. And yes, I had the occasional child who lost the privilege. Some just let it go. It didn't help them. They didn't mind not having it. They got to try it. They understood that it didn't work. But a few came back and asked if they could try it again, and they were successful that time. There will always be those kids who will test you and how far you will let things go. All right, next one. Here's another one that you might instantly say, not in my classroom. Okay, we all know about fidgeting. For some of us, it kind of makes you crazy when you're up in front of the class and somebody's doing something with their hands. Makes a noise, that's a problem. But this item is called fidget items, or fidgets. It's from Sensory Solutions set number 5. It's sheet number 5. And that one is titled Fidgets, More Than Fun. This might be appropriate for a child who is diagnosed with autism, ADHD, any child with identified focus or calming issues. They might not have shown the fidgeting. What you do is, it could be for anybody that shows distractibility. Have the fidget items available and allow them to be used during times that children are required to concentrate. And this could be during your talking time, during listening time, during desk work time. Children need fidget items for all kinds of different reasons. What you will see in the child who needs this is the one who's constantly playing with something or constantly looking for something to play with to the detriment of his attention skills. And you say, what? I'm trying to get this kid not to fidget and focus on my lessons. And you're telling me to give him another plaything? As little sense as this seems to make, it can work really well. And this is another strategy that can be tried with all of your students, as long as it works. It will be a distraction for some, so they won't use it. It might only work at times for others, and you will guide them into making good choices. This is where your honest explanation to the kids comes in. What you do is gather a basket or other container where a variety of fidget items are stored for use by students. These things should vary from soft to hard, squishy to rough. Tell the children that they are to find an item that feels good in their hands and that makes them feel calm. Stress that it's not to be the coolest thing or the cutest thing or of a certain color. Tell them their hands cannot see, so they need to find something that their hands like. Allow the kids to hold their items while you teach a short lesson. You may have to do this several times or let them hold the item for a period of time. If play occurs that distracts from the lesson, just say, you know, excuse me, this is not working for you and it's making you focus less on your work. We'll put it back for now so you can get your work done. If you feel it is a child who really could use a fidget, you can suggest a different texture and try that. The children and you will soon find out that either the fidget distracts from focus or it helps immensely. It may take some kids multiple tries on different days to find objects that work, so let them have other chances. For those who are solely interested in a new toy, their trials are over. Just explain that part of your job is to see that their work is done and that this just isn't working. Okay, the last one I'm going to share with you today is called Thinking Cap. We've all heard this term used in terms of learning. This comes from Visual Vibes, the sensory solution set number 7. Children with autism, in general, children who are visually sensitive, they will show an avoidance of light, sensitive to visual environment. You know, the kid that when you have the lights off for something and turn them back on, they seem to overreact. This is really not an overreaction on their part. They are that sensitive to change in lighting. And what the kids do is wear a baseball-type cap inside. Now, I know some of you are saying that this is not according with manners. Well, courtesy may dictate the removal of hats when in a building, but your job dictates that you will teach these kids, and if something as simple as wearing a hat will help, why not? Any cap with a brim will work. Each child should have his or her own for hygiene reasons. Not all children will be able to concentrate while wearing it. It may make them sweat or may make them play with it. If so, do like you did with any other thing that doesn't work. It's done. Only those kids for whom it works need to wear it, and it should be stored at school so it's always available. You may have to do some public relations with other teachers who work with a child to explain the purpose. A side note about this strategy is that Diane shared with me, some people appear to function better when they have some sort of pressure on or around their heads, so you may find that this helps as well. Another hint about visual sensitivity. Apparently, there are some kids who are actually sensitive to the light that is reflected on their desktop. An easy way to test this is to put a mirror flat on the desktop in the child's visual range while working and see if the light reflects into their eyes. If it does, try moving the desk to a different setting. So these are your first 5 practical solutions for special needs in the regular classroom. What do you do now? Well, next steps. You can learn more with the mini action guides in our new library. There is more information out there on the web, of course, but our time is limited. We want you to have instant access to the basics. cut to the chase synopsis of what you need to know, and we want you to have it now, the day you're assigned the sensory sensitive kid, or the one who craves sensory input to the detriment of your masterfully designed lessons. This is why we've designed and written a sensory solution set of action guides. With this set of action guides, you will find the 5 strategies presented today, along with dozens of other methods for supporting sensory needs in the classroom. Sensory Solutions is just one series in our action guide library. There are several other series like Classroom Challenges, Teen Bridges, several more, and even more to come. All are designed to give you strategies you can use immediately in the classroom to solve all kinds of teaching problems and support all sorts of special student needs. Diane will tell you more about how to access more of the help for regular classroom teachers. Diane?
Thanks, Dora, for all your real-world information. I appreciate that you've tried these things and you know what to do if they do and don't work. In your talk, you're able to cover some pretty broad areas like gentle tactile and the use of nature, which seems to have a calming influence, the use of large muscles, the use of oral muscles and hydration, and going a bit off track, did you know the jaw is the strongest muscle in the body, and some believe because it is so close to the brain, using jaw muscles might calm the brain more than using other muscles? Then there were the fidget items, and finally the thinking cap that looked at both pressure and visual. Now, if anybody has a question for Dora, if you'd like to type it in now, that would be fine. I have a couple here that came in, and I'll ask Dora those questions, but please feel free to type in the box that's on the right-hand side of your screen. The first question, the two questions are related. What kinds of things do you like to put into the fidget basket?
Okay, there are numerous commercial items available, but you can just as easily gather cheaper things, even some common household items and discarded toys for this purpose. Just be sure to vary the textures. One parent note might provide all you need. If you send home a list of specific things with a heading like, we're gathering small things that feel good to our hands, the items should be small enough to fit in one of a child's hands. You have to give parents guidance on stuff like this, or you may have a big teddy bear in your fidget basket. If you have any of these items that are clean and they're in good shape, please send them in. Then list some suggestions and some things that children, oddly enough, have found fun to hold and calming to hold. The new plastic dish scrubbers, for some reason, prickly things, just calm some children. Koosh balls, squishy balls, softer furry things, or cloth, just little squares of furry cloth. Just make sure that the kids understand that when they bring in a donation, it does not become theirs, that it's a donation to a classroom basket. Now, if a child has already discovered, and his parents have, that a certain kind of tactile item works for him, certainly let that child have what the parent says. So you can kind of work with parents on that.
Wonderful. And I think you've kind of answered it in a way, but the next question was, where do you get the fidget basket solutions? Where'd you get the item, sorry, for the fidget basket?
Oh, I'm sorry. Like I said, you can get them in any, we have dollar stores here, any kind of bargain store. Or you can ask parents to send them in. When you're choosing them, think texture and opposites. If you go that route, you'll probably end up with a variety of things. If you think hard, soft, squishy, firm, rough, smooth, fluffy, and dense, rubbery, or slick. And you will find that some of these actually gross children out. Some of the rubbery things, some children are really, and one of my own children, I found, was really put off by anything that felt, had a rubbery texture to it. So he would have been a child that would have preferred a smooth thing. Bargain bins and discount stores. But don't limit your ideas to just toy items, because some of the really more common household items are great. Powder puffs. I've seen these for sale in bargain bins. Small, thick emery boards. They have these for sale really cheap in bargain bins sometimes. And feel it yourself. If you pick up something and you think, oh, this feels something like smooth or rough or fluffy or soft or good, it will probably work if it's safe in a child's hands.
Terrific. Thanks so much. Well, I don't see any questions coming up, so Dora, you must have answered them all already. Thank you.
Okay.
I want to thank all of you for attending. It has been a joy to organize this and to introduce our expanded list of action guides. I hope it can help many people and do, as Dora said before, the rising tide to lift all boats. It'd be wonderful if all the classrooms, all the homes, all the public spaces were that bit kinder, that bit more sensitive, and we could all thrive a bit more. Hope to speak with you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.